Hi, my name's Courtney Thorpe, and welcome to More Than Just a Mum.
My crew very quickly disappeared. I found it really hard to bond.
Don't go to the gym, just have a sleep.
This is a special week on More Than Just a Mum because I'm joined by my best friend of how many years now, Jess?
I think we were six when we met. It was primary school.
Yeah, so you were better at maths than me.
26.
Stop. That makes us sound so old.
Yeah, 26 years of friendship.
So pretty safe to say that both of us know pretty much every aspect of each other's lives.
I'd say every aspect of each other's lives.
Probably too many aspects.
The good, the bad, the nitty, the gritty. We've seen it all.
So there was so many reasons I wanted to get you on. One, because you actually have a crazy story into motherhood that I've never actually gone into deep detail with you about.
No, and I don't really go into deep detail. Not in a way that I don't want to, just that it never really occurred to me. Yeah, yeah, like it never really comes up, or it never kind of occurred to me how crazy it kind of is.
It is crazy. Like it's full on.
Yeah, it is full on.
But on top of that, a couple of years ago, you also became a foster mum.
I did become a foster mum, yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah, it's unreal. It's very, very rewarding. Yeah. I was at the time coordinating a before and after school care where I was working, obviously, and two children there, their care agreement had ceased and they were looking for new homes and they were siblings. I heard they were going to get split. Pretty much went home, told my husband the story, and he was like, what do we have to do to keep them together? Aww. And then 3 days later,
Was that all it was? 3 days?
Yeah, it was a really quick turnaround because we're kinship carers by our relationship, like association to them. Okay. So they came out, assessed the house and, you know, yep, you're safe, blah, blah, blah. And then 3 days later I was at Osh and got a phone call. Yep, you've been approved to take these children home. They're coming home with you this afternoon. Their belongings are going to be dropped off to you this afternoon. And I remember driving home with these two new kids in the car. We stopped in at 7-Eleven to get toothbrushes and stuff, and a Slurpee and a packet of chips. Like, it was all very joyous. But, I went home and two mattresses on the floor in the kids' rooms, like my biological children's rooms, just for, like, sleepovers. And then the next day we were at Amart or Fantastic, something like that, buying bunk beds to change our lives around, basically.
Crazy.
Yeah.
I want to get obviously more into that, but before we do, to give a bit of background on you, you became a mum when we were 24?
Yeah, 24. Yeah.
24. And you've now got two beautiful children, Miles and Charlie.
I do.
Where I wanted to start is at the beginning of your motherhood journey, really, because I also find that super interesting in that you were the very first one of all of us.
Yeah, I was the first one. I had one other very dear girlfriend to me that had had children and she was it. And then, yeah, I fell pregnant and, well, he's now my husband, but at the time we'd been together for 5 months.
But we went to primary school with him.
I've known him for a long time.
And you dated him in high school.
We dated as teenagers.
And then it was very scandalous because he was younger than you and that was a big thing in high school.
Yes, and he's still younger than me. I'm still cougar vibes.
I feel like that's gotten more acceptable as we've gotten older. Back in high school, you were such a cradle snatcher.
God, I did it twice.
It was so scandalous. Yeah. But then you rekindled the romance on a night out at Fridays.
We rekindled the romance.
So 5 months into that relationship, and you fell pregnant.
I fell pregnant. In high school, I had kind of like a fainting sort of disorder, autoimmune disease, right? Yeah. So, and I'd started fainting a lot again and I was like, oh, here we go. This is coming back. What's going on? Sometimes you just get this feeling like, oh, I should just take a pregnancy test. Like, I don't know why, but it just kind of comes out.
You just
have this weird inkling. So, took one, BJ was home and it was was positive and I came out of the bathroom and I was like, you have to come here. Like, what is this? And he just looked at it. He goes, "What is that?" I just like he was so lost for words. And I was like, "I'm pregnant. Like this is a pregnancy test." And it was raining, and he just went outside and sat on the front steps in the rain, and we were like, oh my goodness.
In shock?
In shock. We were both just in such a state of shock. Fortunately, we both come from really, really supportive and amazing families.
We do both have lovely families.
Yeah, and I knew if things didn't work out between us, that this kid was loved. Like, he has the amazing set of my parents and BJ's parents. Like, whatever happens, this kid is going to be loved. So there was no, I was always going to have this baby.
Yeah.
And BJ was so on board. So that was happening. And then we just had to brace ourselves to tell our parents. And I remember doing laps around Mount Ominee, like shopping center and stuff, trying to avoid telling my parents, like going to their home to tell them. And then we went and everything was fine. And our families
I remember the phone call before that.
I was going to say, and telling all our friends, and I was going to say, do you remember when I called you what you did?
I feel like, say it again, because I think this also leads into a really perfect example of how different our lives were at the time.
Totally different. So obviously told all our close girlfriends. I have, my bridesmaids, the girls that were my bridesmaids. So Courtney, you were one. Courtney was one of my bridesmaids. My sister, my girlfriend Jackie, and my girlfriend Rico. And they were the three that I, you know, or four that I told straight away. And I've called Courtney and I was like, I have to tell you something.
Hold on. Before you did that though, here I am sitting in my apartment on my own, I was watching TV, you called and I rambled on probably about whatever guy I was dating at the time. Yeah. I rambled for a long time.
Like I did let you go. I was so nervous.
You really let me go for quite some time and it was about rubbish before I think I finally took a breath and went, anyway, what's new with you?
Oh, actually, I'm pregnant.
And then
then you're like, I can't turn off this TV. I'm trying to mute it. Like all you could talk about was the remote. And I was like, Courtney, I've just told you I'm pregnant and you're in such this state of shock and unknown that you're worried about. Yeah.
I just remember being silent for a minute.
Yeah. Silence. And then I can't work this damn remote.
Like, no, it was where the F is. I'll use the real word. It was where the fuck is the remote?
I was going to say, that's very polite of you because you know, I swear like a trooper.
I'm trying to cut back.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm not. So I'm using F and goodness me a lot these days.
Maybe when your daughter's a bit older, you might revert.
Yeah, probably. Another thing that I really wanted to talk to you about was your birth.
Yeah.
Or your births.
Births.
More so.
At two different times.
Your second.
Yeah.
So talk me through what happened.
Yeah, so I guess for a bit of context, with Miles, he's my eldest, I went in, unfortunately my side of the family and BJ's side of the family, it's just big heads all around. Like there's just no avoiding that. So
you knew that was coming
then? That was coming. I tore with Miles, I had a stage 2 tear.
Which
essentially means that you're kind of tearing through your muscles a bit, but you're not getting all the way down to
okay.
Your asshole, for lack of a better term. So you kind of, you're tearing through a bit. And I had an epidural with him, though, and I had an episiotomy. Mm-hmm. So after that all wore off, though, oh, my God, the pain of that. I was like, this is intense. Like,
really?
Yeah, this is unreal. I was so not expecting it. I had visions of pop out my baby. Again, very naive.
Yeah.
Pop out my baby. Like the clothes that I've brought that I used to wear pre-Miles are going to fit me. I've
packed
them. I've packed them. They don't fit. Yeah. And the pain was just like nothing else. I remember having ice packs. I mean, they weren't made for this, but we call them like vaginal ice packs at home, in the home freezer.
Yeah. Remember them.
Yeah.
Yeah, when I first came over.
Just on rotation, like constant rotation. Poor mum doing the rotations of the vag packs for me.
Vag packs.
The vag packs. And I think it was probably like a week or two before I was really properly like upright again or properly upright. Like I really couldn't handle the pain of, I remember having to be on my side or slightly, you know, like skew it just to stop the pain.
Pressure
I couldn't
directly.
Put any pressure on it. It was so intense and unreal. Flash forward then to Charlie. So I had Charlie and Miles 22 months apart, so just under 2 years. Sitting on the couch, Miles was just playing and then my water broke and it cracked. And I was like, oh, okay, this is it. Because with Miles I got induced.
Yeah.
So I had no idea about the movie side, you know, where like, oh, your water breaks and you're going into labour. And I was like, okay, well.
Yelling at Mr. Big on the side of the street.
Exactly. Yeah. That was it was like Miranda's water breaking on Carrie's Jimmy Choo's was my like, that's what labor looks like. So yeah. Like, great, I've had my Miranda moment, time to go in. Okay. So went in, they wanted to send me home. I was in triage and they're like, no, you've got a while. Like, we'll send you home. And I'm really, really grateful and thank my past self for this.
Yeah.
Of saying, no, I actually have never been through this before. I haven't felt it before. I don't feel comfortable going home because I don't know how far to take this.
Okay.
So I made them make me stay.
You advocated for yourself.
I advocated
Good
for myself.
Girl.
Yeah. Advocated for myself. One midwife came in and was like, oh, no, you're not quite there. You know, that was the one that wanted to send me home.
Right. Then so checking how dilated you are.
Checking how dilated I was. Had a change over a shift. The next person came in and was like, you need to go to birth suite straight away. Went into the birthing suite and they were like, oh, it's still taking a bit of time. We want to give you the medication that they give you to speed things up a bit. And I remember they told BJ it was going to be hours. They were like, go and get food. Okay. You know, you've got time. BJ was getting food and I remember turning to my midwife and I was like, it was partway through and I was like, oh, I need the epidural. I want the epidural. I can't do this. And she's like, you're too far gone.
No way. And BJ's off still getting food
BJ's
and you're too far
food.
Gone for an epidural at this point.
I was
point.
Too far gone for an epidural.
So you're in for a natural birth.
I was in for a natural birth.
Were you thinking you wanted to try natural?
I've always been a really open book with both my kids. So I was more like, whatever has to happen, I'm okay with.
Do you wish that they'd given you, flagged you and gone, look, if you, this is last chance epidural here, last call.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah.
100%. I'd had an epidural with Miles and I was a big fan. So
I'm all for the idea.
I've quite liked my little nap on the side when I was labouring. So I was looking forward to that, but I was too far gone. And then I turned to my midwife and I was like, I'm going to shit myself. Like, I feel like I need to shit myself. And she's like, no, love, that's the baby coming. You're ready to go. BJ's still off at the cafeteria because I think he was eating there. So he's like,
he's
sat down for a meal. He's on his break.
Just a bit of a smoko.
He's literally having smoko. And the midwife goes, okay, love, you're ready. You need to push, but you're only 7 centimetres.
What do you mean? Can you even push when you're 7 centimetres? Well, is that a thing?
The baby was ready. I had to. So I had no other choice. There was no...
I thought that it was a process. Like, I thought the baby wasn't ready until it was 10 centimetres.
Well, this is what Sex and the City and everything tells you, that yes, it is, but I'm telling you.
So what does that mean? Like, what baby's engaged, ready to come out? Like, whether the exit's
I'm ready
fully
or
open or not.
Whether the exit is prepared or not.
Baby's coming
baby's
out.
Baby's coming. Baby's coming out.
Can that
coming
happen
out.
If you're only dilated 2 centimetres? Like, could the same thing happen?
Surely not. The header gets stuck.
But that might be 7.
Well, 7's a bit of wriggle room, isn't it?
I don't know. It depends on the size of that bloody head.
Well, that was my next point. So, unfortunately, massive heads all round on both sides of our family. So, I was 7 centimetres. I just had to push.
Naturally, at 7
Naturally
centimetres,
at 7
you're
centimetres.
Delivering and your husband's still not there?
So, he's come in right when I'm... ready to push now.
Good
Thank God he's back because could not have done that without him.
Probably I'm, heard you from the cafeteria at that point.
He definitely heard me. Unfortunately, I was like the first birthing suite on the left. So he did say afterwards, he's like, I could hear you when I've come back in. You were screaming like a banshee, he describes it as. Like,
so all these mums that are about to experience birth for the first time and you're there, welcome.
Yeah. Hi, welcome.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, so... I gave birth naturally at 7 centimetres. I have to say, as horrific as that sounds, was the most rewarding
empowering thing
I have ever done in my life. And I really can't describe it. Like, I struggle to describe it, but it was so empowering.
No, I get that. Well, you're doing what you were literally built to do as a woman.
Like, it was the most painful thing I've ever done in my life.
But you did it.
But I did it, and I'm so thankful that I did it.
Yeah.
Because it was just such like a, I was like, I am woman, hear me roar type moment, as cliche as that sounds. It was
just
amazing.
Yeah.
Baby was born and we had a little girl. We weren't finding out, so that was a surprise. It was BJ told me. I was like, what is it? What is it? Aww. And he was just like, it's a girl.
Aww.
I was like, oh my God. Like, I really thought it was going to be a boy.
You did really think it was going to
really
be a boy.
I really thought it was going to be a
boy. I knew it was going to be a girl.
Okay, well, you chopped and changed a few times. But
that was so, at the end, whatever it was, I could say I knew it was going to be.
Like what now? Like 5, 6 years
exactly.
later?
Exactly.
So So baby was just up on my chest having that skin to skin.
Yep.
The midwives are checking to see how my delivery had gone. And I had to
assess the damage.
Yeah. I had a student midwife as well as my midwife, and they were both fantastic. And this poor student midwife, she's still part of my story, so I hope she's okay. But she had to literally stick her finger up my bum. Okay. To see how I'd torn, because it's all about your muscles and everything.
Stop it. That's pleasant after you've just pushed a baby out.
Yeah. Well, I had my midwife by my head and I just looked at her and I said, I'm about to pass out. The pain when her finger was up my ass was so horrific.
I had no idea that's how they check PS.
Well, I don't know if that is.
I thought it was a visual thing. Like it was just kind of you look, you go, oh, yes, that's a significant tear.
Well, yeah, I think they have to see where they're going to tear
and everything. Very new information for me. Yeah, okay, well, yeah.
So I was starting to pass out. The midwife by my head, she's just kind of yelling. All these senior nurses and doctors just came running straight into the room. They took my baby off me. Took baby off me and were like, you've got to go straight up for surgery.
Did they tell you why or were you?
I was really kind of in and out of it. I found out when I got up there that you've had a stage 4 tear. And I was like, oh, shit. Like, I thought I'd tear because I tore with Miles. And stage 4 is the worst of the worst. There's like stage 1, 2, 3, 4. Stage 4 means you've literally torn from like your vaginal flaps, for lack of a better word, right round to your rectum. Like you were kind of...
You are flying in the wind.
You were quite literally flying in the wind.
Wow. Yeah.
And they were like, you just need to go straight up for surgery.
Your brand new baby. You're separated.
Separated.
And you're going in for surgery.
I'm going in for surgery. BJ was still in the suite with the baby.
Did they tell him?
No.
So he had no idea.
He knew I was going up for surgery, but he didn't really know much more than that. What for?
Or if you were going to be okay or
because I lost a lot of blood too.
Right.
I don't know. I can't remember how much. I lost a lot of blood as well. So there was just a lot of unknowns and a lot of people and a lot of really like panic and fast acting things. And the thing that makes me the most emotional is thinking, like, I was gone for about 4 hours.
Wow.
And he had no idea. You envision this really kind of majestic time, like you've just had your baby and everything and you're having that moment as a family.
For sure.
And his partner's just gone.
What does he do in that moment? Like what happens when she wants to feed or?
She got formula. They had to get on with what they'd normally do.
Yeah.
So he was doing a lot of the skin to skin to establish that oxytocin.
I mean, I know
the
same thing happened with Kennedy.
And she had formula pretty much from the get go to help with that. We were waiting to go into the surgery room. I said to the midwife, can you just tell BJ her name's Charlie?
Oh.
Yeah. I went into surgery and I had, I guess maybe similar to an epidural, but
like a spinal tap.
Yeah. So that they could, numb me from the waist down because they had to stitch me all the way back up. I remember being on the metal bed thing and just the adrenaline taking over. Like I was non-stop shaking from the waist up. I could not control my body.
Yeah, I remember that with the C-section. The shaking is unbelievable. It's like you have no control and it's your whole body and violently shaking.
With both Miles and Charlie, I was like, I had no idea this was a thing, the shaking. Like I have never, ever heard of the shaking being spoken about before.
I wasn't told.
Yeah, and then it was just like, oh, okay, so I'm rattling around on this steel thing.
Your stitches down there are going zzzz.
Stitches are going. Please let them be straight. Who knows?
BJ and then, probably.
Oh, that's all right. I came out and obviously I'm on like a bunch of painkillers.
You're high as a kite.
High as a kite. I've had all that, you know. I've reconnected with my baby in the hallway outside the ward. So I got moved up to the ward that I was going into because we went through the public system.
Yeah.
And Charlie got wheeled along in her little, you know, the clear little thing with BJ. And that was, when we got reunited.
Yeah. I remember you really struggling when you started to find out what the repercussions from that tear meant for you.
I was really unprepared for what was coming.
Did anyone warn you before you left the hospital, look, this is what could happen, this is what recovery, nothing?
It was certainly my follow-up appointments, and that's when reality really started to hit.
Mm.
The first one, they just very matter-of-factly were like, okay, so all healing well, but you're not likely going to be able to run again. And I was real sporty spice. I've played netball since I was 6 years old.
I run.
I love
any sport, any and every sport.
Any
really.
Sport, yeah. Not in a gym junkie kind of sense. Just in a, I love to be active.
Yeah.
And that hit me for six. And you're sort of just given a lot of information. So you kind of like, they're still talking, and I'm like, I can't run. You know, but okay, my appointment's finished, time to go.
Your whole life's just changed, and not even just with the sport, but like you've got two young children that you want to keep up with.
Two young children.
I mean, that would be what would be running through my head. Like you go in and you imagine all these times of going to the park and running around with them and keeping up with them, and all of a sudden you're being told you can't run. Like that's actually a really big
thing. It just completely, absolutely floored me. And I was like, is this it? I'm only 26 when I had Charlie. I was like, how can this be it? But I was also fresh mum again. Yeah. You've got two young kids that you have to look after.
Yeah.
So they come first. So that question just lay on the back burner for me for a long time.
Yeah.
It wasn't until 2020, COVID, I was really miserable. That little voice in the back of my head was like, I just want to play netball.
Yeah. You and I have also been super, super open with each other over the years about our struggles with our own bodies and our body image. And both of us, you know, we weren't the women that just bounced straight back after babies.
No.
Bloody Sex in the City. Did that also make it harder for you, feeling uncomfortable in your body, but knowing that you can't exercise the way that you normally would?
Oh, 100%. I felt quite trapped. I still do.
Yeah.
Because I know how I can get myself back.
Yeah.
And I don't mean that to sound shallow, but I do feel a bit better in myself when I'm, you know, like happier and content in my body weight and everything like that.
I even think just the endorphins from more high impact exercise make you feel better straight away. Even sometimes it's not about the size or the weight you are. It's just that being active that helps.
Yeah, and I love a challenge and all that sort of stuff. And I went and saw a physio who specializes in women's pelvic floor and everything.
Mm-hmm.
One of my girlfriends who's an OT put me onto her. She was the person that was like, we can get you back on track. That took me about 4 or so years before I really started pursuing that for myself, though.
Do you wish you'd tried sooner? You wish you'd gone and gotten second opinions.
I wish I'd gone and got second opinions.
Yeah.
And they said at that same appointment that it's really unlikely you're going to be able to carry children. Not that I even knew if I wanted a third, but just having that option. That's what I was most upset about. That
the
option
choice
was taken away from me.
Yeah, it was made for you.
It was made for me.
Yeah.
Because they were saying, even if I ended up like having a cesarean or something like that, even if it wasn't vaginal, because I'd probably be like a stage six or something that they haven't discovered. That my pelvic floor muscles couldn't actually hold that baby inside.
Yeah. So obviously you now are back on track a little bit.
Beej and I always said we'll have two naturally and we thought our third would always be either adopted or fostering or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Granted, this happened way faster than we thought it would.
Yep.
But we feel like our little family is complete as
you
it
have
is.
Your third.
I've got my third.
So talk me through that now. Let's go back to the fostering, because this is a whole another element of motherhood that I feel like it's not actually acknowledged as motherhood, you know, like, but it is. It's a, I mean, I can only speak and it's a different dynamic again, but from being a stepmother, you know, that I feel like that's even more accepted as a mothering role, whereas, you are still a mother to this child.
It's weird. It's kind of, as you say, maybe similar with the step parenting, and like all of a sudden you've got kids. And this was very all of a sudden. So my foster son is 13 going on 14. Beautiful, absolutely beautiful, beautiful boy. So we literally had an instant teenager.
See, that's like, I feel like everyone tells you you are never prepared for teenage years, and I agree with that. And you guys didn't even get the lead up. It was just, yeah, have a teenager.
So thank goodness he has got a very good head on his shoulders and all that sort of stuff. I've got a touch wood here, but we've had no issues yet. Yeah, we were thrown really quickly into becoming instant parents of children that I knew to a certain extent. BJ had never met them.
Yeah. So was that the first time BJ met them when they came to your home to live?
Yeah.
God, he's a good man.
Yeah, so that was the first time BJ met them when they came to the home.
And what about Miles and Charlie?
One of the children and Miles are in the same class and had been since prep. Okay, so Miles is now in year
two.
Were
they friends?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay.
And they really quickly fell into typical siblings. Like they knew which buttons to push. They really knew how to grind each other's gears. And they're, as I said, they're in the same class. So they were 24/7.
God, that's a lot, isn't it?
Yeah, I couldn't even handle that. Like, I just
especially because it's not like they were twins. It's not as though they...
It's not that blood.
Yeah, and or that that's just been how things were their entire life. It was this overnight being with this person 24/7.
Literally overnight. Yeah. Look, the kids were great and they still are to this day. We had to end care with one of the children, which is such a difficult thing to do. But it was that we need to consider our biological son. Yeah. In being Miles, and when he starts voicing that he's having a really tough time, that's when we had to listen and get a plan in place, and that was so difficult to do. We still have a relationship with that child, and I'm so grateful for that, because that's where fostering's really weird. Yeah. And we're fortunate in that our foster son, we've got an amazing connection with his biological family and everything like that, but there are other people in the system that the kids come and go. And this happened for us at the start of January, and it's recent that I've realised I'm still really processing it. It's really hard to go from, well, you know this, you and I actually, I've just realised, just looked at you and I was like, we've had this conversation, in that you're being a mum, you're parenting, and then next day they're not there.
They're ripped away from you essentially.
Like, yeah, they're not there. I knew that this was the best option possibility for everyone, like this had to happen, and everyone's absolutely thriving. Like it couldn't have gone better.
Absolutely.
I'm so, I think so content.
And even for you, the foster child that was replaced, rehomed, I don't know what the right terminology is, placement, he's doing amazingly well in his new environment too.
Absolutely.
So it really was the best decision for everybody.
It was the best decision, but it's just one of those things
you've, and I mean through living it and you living it, it was the biggest eye-opener that you aren't just a mum because you give birth. Like you can choose to be a mum and care for children and play that mothering role. And you do, when your maternal instincts kick in, you have such a strong attachment to these children. Yeah. It is different to your own 100%.
Yeah.
But, you know, you still have those protective feelings of them and those loving feelings and everything else that comes with it.
Yeah.
So to then all of a sudden... You know, obviously, again, different circumstances. Mm. Mine was not by choice at all, but it still is you having to overnight again. You've got to let them go.
Yeah.
How do you do that?
And that's the part I still don't know.
Yeah.
I'm figuring it out. But I'm...
Do you feel guilt?
Always.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Why?
Sometimes I fear that I failed that child, and I know I didn't. Sometimes I wish I could have done more, but I'm sure enough in myself that I know that our environment wasn't right.
Okay.
And I'm sure enough in myself as a mother of some kind to both that child and to my own child being Miles that I've made the right decision for both of them.
Yeah, you really did.
But always feel guilt about that. And I think I always will.
It's so crazy for me as one of your best friends watching what you did for both of the boys, I think is just so unbelievably incredible. And the fact that, you know, you did in a time in their lives where they so desperately needed someone to give them that love and that care and that protection, and you offered that tenfold.
Yeah.
I know you feel probably... not like it was completely selfless, but to me it was, for you to have to actually say and admit to yourself, I am not the best carer for him and this home is not the best place for him. That's a really hard pill to swallow. Mm. Even, you know, ego-wise, we've all got our ego that comes into play. Yeah. To have to admit that to yourself and make that decision for him and your own children.
Yeah, and I think that's it, honestly. It's such a difficult thing to decide to end care, and I'm really lucky that our support agency, like, I knew where he was going to end up and who he's with and all that kind of stuff. And as I said, I'm really fortunate to have a wonderful relationship with the biological family, in that I'm referred to as bonus mum and other mum by the biological family. So I still get sent photos from visits and stuff and things like that. Like, I'm really fortunate in that. So I still feel very much a part of it. And I think that keeps me going to a certain extent. And being able to see that that's come to fruition and what, I mean, I'm a planner. So to kind of see that that little plan has sort of fallen into place for that child helps a lot.
And he's thriving.
Yeah. It just, doesn't always, the guilt, I think, was just still.
Yeah, still there. How did you find going from a mum to your biological children to becoming a mum to a total real stranger's children?
Yeah, really difficult. So I've worked with children, volunteered with children since I was about 15. Mm-hmm. So I tapped in a lot to just experience and knowledge from that, sort of like reading their emotions and stuff and then being able to kind of act accordingly off that. I already had that sort of protective relationship of them. Yeah. So I found that,
knowing a bit of background about what they've been through. Yeah.
I found that part came quite naturally. And then I think I tapped into my, education kind of background for the rest of it. But it was really difficult. It's kind of the small things of, if Miles, I don't know, left like a dirty plate out or something, I'd be like, pick that up and put in the wash, you know?
Yeah.
But I was like, oh, am I?
What are your boundaries when it comes to,
Yeah, that was really difficult to sort of ease into. And you do have to ease into it because you've got children that are in a totally new environment.
Yeah. Well, all of the kids are, aren't they?
All of them.
I mean, even yours. It's even mine. A total different environment. You guys are in a different environment.
Yeah, yeah. So I think it was really difficult and probably more so for BJ. We had a lot of conversations early on, like having those relationships and forming those relationships. And I'll get emotional now. Like, my foster son and BJ have the most beautiful relationship. It wasn't forced.
Yeah.
And it wasn't I'm your father kind of thing. It was I'm here to look out for you and protect you and be an adult figure for you. Yeah. And they are just,
How has going from having two children and also, you know, your home.
It's tiny. It's
What have you got? A three-bedroom, one bathroom?
A three-bedroom, one bathroom. Tiny little study
with six
area.
People.
Yeah.
One living area. Going from your two children and your family of four to now a family of six, well, now to five.
Yeah.
How's your marriage survived all that?
We've certainly had our moments and definitely maybe grey areas of, am I putting the kids first or us, you know what I mean? Like, we had to work really, really hard at our relationship still needs to come first. And we've always done that, even with our biological children. Like, we are each other's biggest supporter, communicator, all that sort of stuff. But really difficult to navigate because you've got four children then.
Totally outnumbered.
Totally outnumbered that need you.
Yeah.
And I know you've discussed this on your podcast before, but, you know, like, you're touched out, like, all that kind of stuff. Like, you've all of your oxytocin and everything is given to those four. Yeah. And then I had like little slivers left, if anything.
Occasionally in the right window when all the stars aligned.
That's probably, I think, the hardest, adjusting to kind of then you're splitting your time rather than between like four people splitting their time in a family unit. You're really splitting it six ways. And as you say, it's a small house. Like, the two foster children are sharing a room. Our two biological children are sharing a room.
Yeah.
Like, there's one TV area. You've got, like, trying to dish out screens and stuff left, right and centre so people have space just so you can kind of get your
accommodate
own space
everybody.
And accommodate. And
do you see yourself as just mother and this is what it encompasses? Or do you see yourself as mum to Miles and Charlie, foster mum to your foster son?
No, I'm definitely mum to all three.
Yeah. It's just this is what your motherhood looks like.
This is what my motherhood looks like now. So they are all treated the same.
Yeah.
My foster son is just one of our own.